Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Ann Aries.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And hey, it's a new year.
Yeah, so, you know, new year, new you, new diet.
New diet. Well, are we talking about fad diets today?
How did you know?
Oh, it's, we already did the research and it's in the episode title. And
I'm glad you know what we're talking about.
Oh, me too. Oh my goodness. I mean, it's a hard coming back from a break, but I'm glad it's not that hard.
Yes, me as well. And sort of a disclaimer right at the beginning, I'm pretty sure our thoughts on fad diets are clear by now.
Yes. And if they're not clear right now, they will certainly be clear as we discuss them throughout this episode.
Yeah. We're going to tell you what they were. Maybe some science about them, why they don't, or maybe might work, but we're not advocating
any of these diets. Most of them we're strongly advocating against.
Yes.
A few of them
might be okay.
You might want to make your own decision about. But hey, what's a fad diet?
Yeah. And what is it compared to like a regular diet, say?
So, okay, let's just define what a diet is. Because like technically, pedantically, we're all on diets. A diet in that sense is just what a person eats and drinks. The word comes from the Greek dieta. There's a D-I-A. I-T-A, I'm not sure how to say it, meaning a way of life.
Ah.
Yeah. And the famous school at Salerno, which was this medieval medical school that basically formed the basis for Western medical learning, had this to say. Health consists in the moderate use of the air we breathe, of food and drink, activity and repose, sleep and waking, and of the passions of the soul, that use being called the diet.
Ah. Yeah. Passions of the soul.
Passions, yeah. Also, I'm not sure how we can moderate the air that we breathe. Like,
you don't moderate the air that you breathe?
Well, not.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
That definition was from around when the word diet emerged in English and French in the 1200s CE, though it quickly, over the next couple centuries, became associated with the second meaning of diet, which is a restriction of what a person eats and drinks, ostensibly for the sake of their health and probably to lose weight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
A fad diet is a branch off of that second definition. These are dietary concepts or plans that catch the public's wild imagination because they promise that relatively simple actions will yield quick and amazing results, usually in the form of weight loss, but sometimes in terms of other wellness factors from like heart health to mental health to hair sheen to longevity. You know, this one weird food will make your butt look great in only 4 days.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm so excited.
I know. Avoiding bananas will solve your relationship problems.
Oh, man, I knew it.
Finally, the key to eternal life is fish stock.
Why aren't we all just drinking fish stock?
Nothing but fish stock.
Okay, well, I don't want eternal life if that's what it means.
They're the sort of diets that, you know, you've never heard of one day, and the next day you're seeing them talked about on magazine covers and, like, used as a marketing term on food packaging, and that one actress that you really like is swearing that it changed her entire life.
Right.
There might be a book or, like, branded foods or other products that are available for purchase. Some of these fad diets seem to emerge spontaneously, like, almost like memes, but others are heavily marketed industry efforts that make people billions of dollars.
Billions.
In the billions. And yes, speaking of that industry.
Industry. Numbers.
I've got some industry numbers for you.
Yes, excellent.
Different marketing research companies measure the diet industry in different ways. But when you include gym memberships, weight loss programs, diet drugs, and the sales of food and drinks that specifically market themselves as diet stuff, everything from 100-calorie cookie pouches to like Diet Coke to meal replacements, And that's what this one firm by the name of Market Data Enterprises does. Americans spend over $60 billion a year on dieting.
Just Americans.
Just Americans.
Whoa.
When you focus just on those consumable products, it might be something like $20 billion on foods alone. And numbers are tricky, but that is so much.
That is quite a lot. Yeah.
And the industry is changing, as it always is. And for the past couple of years, diet food companies have been trying to keep up with the newest trend in dieting, which is whole foods, mm-hmm. with an emphasis on wellness rather than weight loss, which overall I think is a really great thing because weight is just a number. And if we've never mentioned it on the show before, it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with your overall health.
Yeah, generally, no.
Generally. In 2015, Fortune magazine reported that while 77% of us were trying to eat healthier, only 19% said that we were actually on a diet.
Mm.
And furthermore, they reported that sales were in decline at traditional diet food companies pretty much across the board. Nutrisystem, Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, Healthy Choice, Lean Cuisine had all had experienced significant losses over the past couple of years. So, in early 2016, the marketing director of Lean Cuisine even told NPR, "Lean Cuisine is an emblem of the diet culture that we've all grown up with. We know that and we want to walk away from that and focus on eating well and eating healthy."
That's interesting.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that the industry is faltering, just that what they're marketing to us as healthy is changing. With things like meal replacements like Soylent and plant-derived low-calorie sweeteners like Stevia pushing their way to the forefront. One industry forecast compiled by Research and Markets in 2017 predicted that the global weight loss and diet management market, that is just the consumable stuff, will rise over the next 10 years, reaching over $85 billion globally by 2025.
My brain was just like, did a pretty drastic stutter over that number.
We've basically come back around to the concept that this like sort of original old school, like medieval school concept of a diet being a lifestyle again, which is hypothetically great.
Yeah.
But still, it is so profitable to convince people that your product or method or book will make them svelte and healthy.
Yeah. Seriously, next time you're at the grocery store,
just take it in.
Yeah.
Just be aware of how many things.
Even things kind of indirectly.
Yeah.
Like magazine covers, for instance.
Yeah.
So much.
I mean, there are like labels on like fruit.
Yeah, gluten-free.
Yeah.
That cracks me up. I'm sorry. That's not really related, but I'm sorry that cracks me up.
No, but I mean, gluten-free is also sold as being
it
a
is.
Weight loss diet
yeah.
sometimes. And it's, ugh.
Yeah.
But, okay, so I've got a foodstuff list for us.
A list?
Yeah. Types of diets list.
Oh, fun. Here
yeah.
we go.
Okay. You've got the basics, your low calorie, low fat, low carb. Then things that are meant to bring you particular benefits beyond weight loss. Gluten-free, raw foods, whole foods, paleolithic, detox, alkaline, macrobiotics, ketogenic. You've got the brand names. Atkins, Dukan? I've never seen that.
Never seen it before either.
Dukan.
Sounds pretty good that way.
Marshall Brain talked about it a lot. Atkins, Dukan, South Beach, Suzanne Summers, Summersizing. You've got ones based around a single food group, morning banana, baby food, cabbage soup, grapefruit. It keeps going.
It does. And I'm very interested in baby food. I don't know what that is.
Oh, the baby food diet.
See, that sounds like a joke to me, but I know it must be real.
And it does. We should maybe warn you here at the outset. This list goes on so long that we decided to make this a two-parter.
We did.
So we're going to talk about the kind of older historical fad diets
yep.
here in this first episode, and then some of the newer, perhaps more angrifying ones. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm angry about them all.
Yeah, me too. It's a weird combination of being kind of both angry and amused by some of them. Not so much the modern ones. Those are just frustrating, really.
Oh, so yeah. Yes.
Most of them.
Yes.
But first. Yes.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
It may come as a surprise to you that fad diets go pretty far back. Maybe not. People are weird.
People have always been weird. Yeah.
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 I'm kind of interested that for so long, being thin was part of it. I guess that surprised me more than actual diet.
Yeah, but just based on what body types.
Yeah.
Like what the standard of beauty and how it's changed. Yeah.
Right. The first one that we can find in the historical record anyway was the brainchild of William the Conqueror in 1087 CE.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But brainchild might not be the correct term for it because it was completely ridiculous. It was a liquid diet. Only that liquid was almost always liquor.
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of an early take on drunkorexia, which if you don't know that, that's when college students, usually college students, mm-hmm. don't eat so they can drink all their calories later. It's very unhealthy. Don't do it.
Yeah. No.
His goal was to lose enough weight to once again ride his beloved horse.
Oh.
Which he did. But he fell off his horse, possibly because he was drunk, and died that same year.
Oh.
Yeah. So very much not a sustainable or recommended diet.
No.
William the Conqueror, not a great idea.
Good conqueror, bad dieter.
Yes.
Yeah.
The diet conquered him. We're having a lot of jokes at William the Conqueror's expense. We should move on.
Yes.
This diet of his segues nicely into the next diet, although as far as we know, it was only practiced by one man, Italian nobleman Luigi Cornaro. It involved more alcohol than food. Yeah, once again, 14 ounces of wine to 12 ounces of food per day, to be exact. According to legend, he lived to 102, which was quite rare at the time, and the diet was given the name the Immortality Diet.
12 ounces of what kind of food is what I'm wondering. I mean,
yeah.
Calorie restriction will work as a weight loss regime after a certain point, but like, what kind? I mean, it depends. Anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like it really should go without saying, but no, don't drink most of your calories, folks. Alcohol does not actually contain many of the nutrients that the human body needs.
Many. Forget drinking wine. Women were told to bathe in it for weight loss.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Of course women didn't even get to drink it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Missing the fun part.
I know. We don't even get the fun part of a wine diet. So this was a recommendation from the 1690s, The Ladies' Dictionary by Hannah Woolley. You couldn't use just any wine either. It had to be infused with wormwood, sage, calamint, squinith, and chamomile. And I'm going to go out on a limb bravely and say that it did not work.
I'm going to come out onto this limb with you. Look, nothing that you bathe in or apply to your skin is going to cause weight loss or even affect the appearance of, for example, the totally natural fat storage pattern that is known as cellulite, which practically everybody has regardless of their diet and exercise patterns if they are post-adolescent. Don't really bother. It's fine. Your body is beautiful.
It's fine.
Everyone has it, really.
Here's a fun one.
Oh, fun one.
1727's The Avoiding Swamps Diet.
Well,
yeah. This came about after a writer named Thomas Short published a treatise called The Causes and Effects of Corpulence. And in it, he claimed that after spending time observing people near swamps, he came to the conclusion that a lot of fat people live near swamps, and thus swamps were to be avoided if you wanted to stay slim. I really think he just didn't want to go near swamps.
I guess I can't.
We have no, there's no counter study that I know of.
Right. Sure. Avoid swamps if that's what you're into.
If that's what you're into.
Maybe the extra walking around the swamp
mm-hmm.
helps you burn more calories.
It's true. Well, walking through a swamp is difficult too.
Oh. Though.
I think he just didn't want to go near swamps.
Okay.
We can't recommend this one.
No.
But if you don't want to go to a swamp, then don't go to a swamp. End of story. In the 1820s, another liquid diet that might sound familiar was introduced and popularized by English poet Lord Byron, the vinegar diet.
I had no idea that Byron was into this is crazy to me.
I know. I didn't know either. He was a pale, thin dude, and he said it was thanks to the large quantity of vinegar and water he drank every day, which, by the way, can result in vomiting and diarrhea. Sounds fun, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or some places I read said he would soak potatoes in vinegar and allowed himself also a single cup of tea and a single raw egg. How luxurious. The vinegar used was apple cider. The apple cider vinegar diet made a comeback in the 1950s when dieters were encouraged to drink a mixture of honey and vinegar. Nowadays, drinking apple cider is still seen as a helpful tool for weight loss.
Or apple cider vinegar, yeah.
Yeah. Apple cider, different thing.
Believers
claim that a few tablespoons about a half hour before a meal will decrease your appetite.
And the modern theory here is that one of the compounds in vinegar, acetic acid, blocks enzymes that break down and thus blocks the absorption of some starches in the small intestine. Not simple sugars, mind, and not fats either, just starches. Thus, if you take some vinegar before, during, or after a meal that is starchy, your body won't digest as much of it. And this might help with weight loss because, you know, you're digesting less. It also may help people with diabetes and prediabetes control blood sugar spikes, which can help control the disease. And because it may help lessen blood sugar spiking, it may help you control your appetite. You know, when your sugar spikes, then crashes, most folks are apt to binge eat to make up for that. Mm-hmm. But more research is needed to figure out how much it helps and why exactly. Furthermore, I'm never sure why this apple cider vinegar thing got started, because all vinegar contains acetic acid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'd be pretty good to know whether eating it in food as like part of your normal diet would help too. So as with many things that we're going to say today, the jury is out. But if you do choose to add vinegar to your diet, by the way, don't drink it straight. That can erode the tissue in your teeth and esophagus. Bad times there. Dilute it in a full glass of water or use it in salad dressings. It's delicious.
It is really good. Mm-hmm. My old roommate, if you're listening, hi, old roommate. he kind of went through a series of not even fad diets, just fads. But one of them was this. And he did it for like one day where he would drink a shot of it.
Oh.
And then he couldn't do it. It grossed him out.
One thing that I read said that it can cause nausea when you drink it straight, which the medical professionals writing the article said that they could not necessarily recommend as a weight loss plan.
And neither can we.
Nope.
At this time, or at the same time, the vinegar diet was gaining momentum in the 1800s. It was super in to be super thin. Yeah. And this is probably one of the most disturbing ones for the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was because of the extreme weight loss caused by consumption.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Consumption, to clarify, could mean any fatal disease that involved a wasting of the body. But by the 1800s, it pretty much referred exclusively to tuberculosis.
Which, if you ever watched Moulin Rouge, is what's going on there.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Thomas Trotter, a physician during the time when the consumption look was fashionable, wrote, "So unnatural and perverted are fashionable opinions on the subject that a blooming complexion is thought to indicate low life and vulgarity in breeding.
Ugh.
What a false standard for beauty to prefer a sickly, sallow hue of the countenance to the roses of health."
Oh.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That's weird. another physician and another Thomas Beddoes, claimed women were actively trying to catch consumption so that they would appear more delicate. They were willing to die to look more delicate for, you know, a little bit.
For a while.
Yeah, not to mention you'd be coughing up blood, sometimes up to 2 cups of blood.
Oh.
And you'd be sick.
Yeah, like real sick.
Really
sick.
Like,
it's not a fun...
Yeah, no. So I don't think you'd be the most pleasant to hang around.
It's not the sexiest diet plan I've heard of.
No. Lizzie Sedol often comes up in this conversation about why in the world this was even a thing. She was a muse during the Victorian era, meaning there were quite a few paintings of her that people would go around and admire. Her appeal was thought to be thanks to tuberculosis at the time. So women were like, okay, if I want to look like her,
then
be admired, I must catch tuberculosis.
Let me go catch my death of the fog.
Yes. However, now historians think she didn't have consumption, but anorexia and an opiate addiction instead.
Mm.
Which is just bad all around.
And I guess it does mirror the whole like 1980s model, like heroin chic kind of concept too.
Yeah.
Oh, humans are dumb.
Yeah. But we must forge ahead nonetheless. Here's another odd one. Courtesy of Victorian era women. The tapeworm diet.
Oh, what?
Yeah. This is exactly what it sounds like. It's also one of my favorite bits from The Office. Just FYI. Women at the time often were desperate to lose weight or to achieve a certain figure, mostly thanks to fashion trends like corsets. An enterprising person got the idea to swallow some tapeworms so the tapeworms would eat up all the food in your intestines. Yeah. Not live tapeworms, though. That'd be crazy.
Oh.
You would buy them in pill form, and the eggs would hatch after you'd ingested them. Sounds great, right?
No.
I'm on my way to weight loss.
But no.
Now, quick and how. well, it was great. No, it wasn't great at all. Eventually, you had to get them out. This was another problem. Did you know the tapeworm can grow up to 30 feet? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, there are different pills that you could take that would maybe kill them. Maybe. But if they didn't, the recommendation of the time was to sit in front of a bowl of milk with your mouth agape. The worms from their home inside your intestines would catch a whiff of that sweet, sweet milk and wiggle their way out of your mouth, 30 feet and all. There's no evidence that this worked. Also, side effects of tapeworms could include meningitis, seizures, cysts on your brain, eyes, and spinal cord, and dementia. So the U.S. eventually made the sale of tapeworms illegal. But, yeah, there's actually some debate whether or not this was more of a rumor or actual fact.
Oh,
but
that's a huge relief.
There are ads.
Oh, no.
There are ads in either case for tapeworms to be used for weight loss. And they're worth looking into if you want to, like, disturbing slash how did this ever happen type thing to look at. Some of them read, and all of these, all exclamation points after everything.
Oh, yeah.
Eat, 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 and always stay thin. No diet, no baths, no exercise. Banish fat, the enemy that is shortening your life with sanitized tapeworms. Friends.
Sanitized.
Yes, they're sanitized, Lauren. Friends for a fair form. Easily swallowed. No danger. Guaranteed. Harmless. They're very excited.
Victorians, y'all. Mm-hmm. Don't give yourselves parasites.
Did you ever think we would say that in an episode?
I never thought I would have to. Actually, simultaneously, be wary of anyone who wants to sell you a plan to rid yourself of potential parasites. This is a whole thing. This is a whole, cottage
really?
Industry. Yeah. Barring a legitimate fear of infestation, like from a polluted water source or something like that. I mean, talk to your doctor if you're seriously concerned, but don't buy home remedies for tapeworms.
Well, we cannot do an episode on fad dieting without mentioning our old buddy, Graham, Dr. Sylvester Graham and the Graham diet and his Grahamites.
Yeah.
We have a whole episode on Graham and the Graham cracker, mm-hmm. if you want more.
Sure.
But briefly, Graham was a religious fellow and a vegetarian, one of the first vegetarians. First public vegetarians, I suppose I should say.
Popularized.
Yes, yes, yes mm-hmm. that's a good word. Who preached that obesity was immoral, as in heaven and hell, immoral.
Like you're a bad person if you're fat, so don't do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else he said was immoral? Sex. And especially masturbation. To quell your dastardly sexual urges, he proposed you stick to veggies. And his early form of graham crackers, yes, they were named after him, which in their first form were like this flavorless bits of mush that they were so flavorless upon eating them, you would rid yourself of any sexual desire. This was his plan, you guys.
Yeah.
He got kind of a cultish following. They called themselves Grahamites. And one Grahamite that you probably have heard of, one John Kellogg.
Yes, Kellogg.
Yes, that Kellogg. Who went on to invent cornflakes, and that's one of the nicer things you can say about him.
Yeah.
We mentioned him a bit in our yogurt episode, but we have to do a whole thing on him one day.
Yeah.
We have to. What a guy. Another person who comes up on a semi-regular basis in our episodes is Jean Brulat-Savarin. In 1825, he published a low-carb regimen called The Physiology of Taste. Mm-hmm. Empress Elizabeth of Austria, also known as Empress CC, had a different method for maintaining her 19-inch waist. During her time as empress, from 1854 to 1898, you could find her propped up against a wall, deep asleep, with raw meat on her face.
On her face?
On her face.
Applied to her face. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Her diet was almost made up exclusively of duck broth, which she extracted using a duck squeezer. Mm-hmm.
This has echoes in the fad of the bone broth diet of recent years.
It does.
Which is a detox that promises to vanish 15 pounds and your wrinkles in just 3 weeks via intermittent fasting and consuming a whole lot of bone broth, a.k.a. animal-based stock.
Mm-hmm.
Stock can be fatty, but is pretty good for you. A fasting is complicated. More on that later. Detoxing doesn't exist.
Nope.
your body already does everything that you need there. You see our juicing episode for more on that. But I'm still stuck on duck squeezer.
Yeah. You can find the blueprint online. It's I failed to see how it would work, but it must have. As duck squeezing, not as weight loss.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I have many questions, but we must move on. And speaking of moving on, let's move on to a big one. But first,
a break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
This brings us to, pretty significant one in the realm of fad diets. The 1863 Banting Diet.
Banting Diet! So famous that the banting became the word for diet for a short period of time.
It did, until the 1920s in the U.S. and the U.K. Mm-hmm. It was named after its creator, Englishman William Banting, who claimed to have lost 50 pounds by avoiding bread, sugar, and potatoes, and instead focusing on meat and vegetables. Hmm. Sound a little familiar, perhaps. Essentially a precursor to the low-carb diet. He was adamant about it, too. In 1863, he published a pamphlet called Letter on Corpulence, Addressed to the Public, which contained these strong words. Of all the parasites that affect humanity, I do not know of, nor can I imagine, any more distressing than that of obesity, capital O.
Capital O obesity.
Capital O obesity. Huh. It was a big deal. William Banting, by the way, was an undertaker.
I always get all of my best diet advice from, okay.
Yeah.
About his concept of a diet here. Okay, so like limiting your carbs to whole grains and low-sugar foods and eating mostly vegetables and lean proteins is indeed a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Too much fat and protein is not good for you, though fat packs a lot of calories and too much protein can strain your liver and kidneys when you consume it rather in overlarge amounts. It's also not good to cut out carbs entirely. There are nutrients in many carby things that are hard to get elsewhere. I want to do a whole episode on the entire low-carb Atkins keto thing.
Oh, yeah.
Though, because it's real complicated and there's a lot of very interesting theory and research out there about it.
Definitely.
And many, many strong feelings.
Yes. Very strong feelings.
I've probably already made a few of you angry.
Probably.
Yay!
And one note before we move on from Banting. Mm-hmm. He, similar to Graham, if you didn't get this from his letter to the public, he is one of the reasons why we see being fat as immoral. He was also of that vein.
Oh, wow.
And back when I was on Stuff Mom Never Told You as producer, we did an episode on not really him, but people who made that kind of
vilification
of being fat. So he definitely tied it to morality, and especially for women. So not
thanks buddy.
Yeah, thanks. Still dealing with a lot of those things, actually, a lot of these diets. As the 19th century drew to a close and the 20th century began, American entrepreneur Horace Fletcher made chewing the vogue thing to do.
Oh Fletcher.
At least 100 times per bite, to be precise. This way, the thinking went, you could eat as much as you want, but with that amount of chewing, you turn the food to liquid, and you can only gain weight from solid food.
Hmm.
That was the belief at the time.
Okay.
Yes.
That's not true.
No. Yeah. That is very far from the truth. Also, it was a lot of work probably chewing your food 100 times, so maybe that would just wear you down. From this chewing craze, as it was called, he gained the nickname the Great Masticator. That's an interesting one. I thought it was 36 times, and I tried this when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah?
Chew your food 36 times, and I found there was just no food left. Like, 36 times, it was gone.
It was gone. It had just dissolved entirely and absorbed into, like, the walls of your tongue walls.
And that's why I was just chewing empty air. Mm-hmm. And tongue walls, yes. That's a good word.
This was around the time, by the way, this turn of the century, that the calorie, or kcal, was defined as a unit of food based on the amount of energy that the food's digestion would create within the human body. You know, energy for your cells to do the work of living. And the concept was taken from early 19th century physics explorations that set the calorie, the lowercase calorie, as the heat needed to raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water from 0 to 1 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
So, for example, if intaking 1 gram of food might create an amount of energy in your body equivalent to what it would take to raise 5 kilos of water from 0 to 1 degree Celsius, then that gram of food would be said to contain 5 calories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. And the term was actually accepted into popular dietetics before it received official recognition within the physics community as that a heat unit kind of thing to begin with. This was also around when work in identifying important components of foods, proteins, sugars, vitamins, was also being done. And this science would allow for all new fads in dieting.
Oh, excellent.
Perfect.
Yes. And here's one. Come 1917, we see the first publication advocating calorie counting with Diet and Health with Key to the Calories, written by Dr. Lulu Hunt Peters. She was a physician out of L.A. who had previously penned a 25-cent pamphlet about the importance of calories to diet, the proceeds of which did go to the Red Cross, by the way.
That's okay.
Yeah. And people dug it so much, she expanded it to a book. So this kind of brings us to
the modern period.
More modern periods, and thus the end of this episode.
Yes.
Yes. But first.
But first, listener mail.
Listener mail. Nick wrote in with some Peruvian New Year's traditions. When the clock strikes midnight, you will find many people running around the outside of their house while rolling a suitcase in one hand and holding money in the other. As the tradition goes, the suitcase will bring you many travels in the new year, and of course, money will bring you wealth. If you thought that was weird, most people also wear different colors of underwear depending on what they desire for the new year. Yellow underwear brings you good luck, red underwear brings you love, etc. My sister was recently married, and for the New Year celebration a year ago, the family celebrated Peruvian style. Needless to say, my sister's in-laws were quite surprised when my mother handed them all yellow panties. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, that's great. We've got another one from Randall. And hey again, Randall, about toasting. As for toasting, I have a good friend who is French. She went on a business trip to Japan for the first time. The French toast is chin-chin, and she said that a lot during the business dinner, and she wondered why the Japanese men would just look at the floor when she said this. A day later, she was having dinner with a friend who lived in Japan, and he warned her about the chin-chin toast, since it sounds like the Japanese word for penis.
Oh.
She was so embarrassed having sat at a dinner saying penis, penis to all of these men. So, yeah, check local customs.
I bet you the next dinner I'm at where I get a little tipsy, I'm going to raise a glass and say penis, penis. This is just, I can see it.
I want to be there for that.
I hope that you are.
That.
I hope that you can come into my rescue when everyone's like, oh.
I'm like, we've got a story about that.
We do.
So thank you. Thank you all so much for writing into us. Those are beautiful stories.
Yes. If you would like to write into us, you can, and we would love to hear from you. Our email address is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at foodstuffhsw. We're also on Instagram at foodstuff. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much to our amazing producer, Dylan Fagan, and our audio recorder, Tristan McNeil. Lovely humans both.
Mm-hmm. Please tune in next week for the exciting conclusion of Fad Diets Part 2.
And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.